From spirit led to angel fed. And in between, there's talk of bread, these stones to bread. Always talk of bread when I'm hungry, when I'm starving, when I'm praying and I'm fasting. Everlasting. Always blasting these tempters, please. All these me's. Trust me, believe me, feed me, worship me. And all I have is a desert sigh. In the desert I am waiting for you. I've been waiting for the water of a word from you. In the desert I am waiting for you. I've been waiting for a word from you. That's a Richard Bruxford Colligan. The women of the prison sing that a lot. It goes on to say, and everybody here knows what I mean. And to hear those women read that, say that. And everybody here knows what I mean. In the desert I've been waiting, I've been searching for you. It's amazing, isn't it, that we find ourselves in the desert again? We were here at Advent. It just seems like our faith journey takes us through the desert more than once a year. We have to come to the desert sometimes. Sometimes it's with Jesus. Sometimes it's waiting for Jesus. Sometimes it's in preparation for Jesus. And today marks the beginning for us, the first Sunday in Lent, and it's that 40-day period that sort of mimics Jesus' 40 days in the wilderness, which we read about here. I'm going to share with you another thing that we've been doing with the women out at prison. Pastor Lee, my colleague out there, listened to this podcast. I love that she and I, we orbit the same galaxy, because she listens to Terry Gross and she listens to Krista Tippett, who has this Speaking on Faith, or now it's called On Being. It's a podcast. And she had the poet Naomi Shihab Nye on there a few weeks ago. And Naomi Shihab Nye has this little book. It's called Poems for Wisdom, or Poems for Girls, and it's called Amaze Me. It's got a picture of a maze on it, and it's the word maze, like a labyrinth. And she says in here, and also commented on this podcast, quite a conversation about it, if you have a voice and aren't afraid to spend it, if you have many voices and let them speak to one another in a friendly fashion, if you're not too proud to talk to yourself out loud, if you will ask the questions pressing against your forehead from the inside, I love that image, if you will ask the questions pressing against your forehead from the inside, you'll be okay. If you write three lines down in a notebook every day, they don't have to be great or important, they don't have to relate to one another, you don't have to show them to anyone. You will find out what you notice. Uncanny connections will be made visible to you. That's what I started doing. That's what I started learning when I was 12, and I never stopped learning it. Naomi Shihab Nye. She goes on, every year unfolds like a petal inside all the years that preceded it. You will feel your thinking springing up and layering inside your huge mind a little differently. Your thinking will befriend you. Words will befriend you. You will be given more than you could ever dream. So what Pastor Lee did out at the prison, invited the women to do this, to have a daily discipline of Lent, of just writing three lines a day. I invite you to do that. It's not too late to start. Just write three sentences again. Like she says, they don't have to be spectacular. They don't have to be related to anything. Just see what happens if you take it. So this is my three lines a day notebook. and then she invited me and her in our preaching to take the stories that we have in this Lenten season and to think, what would that person's, you know, the main characters in those stories, what would their three sentences be for the day? So that's how we have been working with that. And it was interesting to approach this the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness with these three things. But let me share one other thing. This image of, if you will ask the questions pressing against your forehead from the inside. A lot of you were here on Wednesday, and maybe you saw people around with these ashes on your forehead. And I almost had this image that we all are bruised. We have this bruise on our forehead coming from the inside out. These questions pressing so hard. What are the questions that need to be asked, that we are constantly searching for? So what are the questions that Jesus is faced with in the wilderness? A word about my Bible. I don't usually have this Bible out. My leather covered, I think this is genuine leather. This Holy Bible was presented to Paul Richard Whitmer by First Congregational Church of Houston, Texas on April 24th, 1983. I was a sophomore in college, and I had already sort of discerned the call to ministry, those voices that she talks about. I had heard some of those voices, and I made the mistake of telling somebody I heard these voices, and one of the people I told was my pastor. And that church has been very supportive, always been very supportive of calling pastors into ministry. So that was one among many over the years. So they gave me this Bible. The reason I have this Bible out to preach on today, it's a red letter. It's a red letter Bible. I think I took this to seminary and quickly got laughed out of scholarly Bible class because of my red letter Bible. They don't really take to that very much, you know. It's like, that's not a real thing. It's just kind of a helpful tool, though. It's like, you look at it, and what's in red? You guys know, are you familiar with the red letter Bible? Yeah, it's Jesus' words. There's a whole thing out there called red letter Christians. It's people who are trying to reclaim the Christian faith. Let's just read the red parts. What happens if we just follow the red parts? Just simplify it. There's too much fighting and bickering going on about what God wants. Okay, so let's do the red letter version. Well, I did this, and guess what? There are three lines in red in this story. I'm like, okay, that's going to be great. I'm going to get the red letter Jesus. I just got my assignment done for me. I preached on this Thursday night. So my assignment was, give us three sentences, you know. What are Jesus' three sentences? At first, I had to have fun with it, so I got the tempter's three sentences, and I alluded them to them already. His are, feed me, believe me, worship me. Those are the tempter's three sentences. Feed me, believe me, worship me. What I loved about that believe me, and I heard afterwards, I heard John Stewart did a whole riff on politicians. You know they're lying when they always continue to say, believe me. Believe me, I know what you need. And believe me, I'm aware of that. And believe me, I'm going to help you. Look at the tempter out here. Believe me. And he says to Jesus, he doesn't just say, believe me, believe your own words. There in Psalm 91, we sang them here earlier. If you jump off, you know, he will command his angels to catch you, lest you dash your foot against a stone. Believe me. Don't just believe me. Believe these. Yeah, those are the tempter's words. What I notice about my three lines when I put the tempter's words down on paper, there's six words and 50% of them are me. That ought to tell you something. Me, me, me. That's the tempter's domain. Feed me, test me, trust me, worship me. What I got, I was excited to find the red letter Jesus because I love the red letter Jesus. The red letter Jesus, he's the one that says things like, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, turn the other cheek. I mean, I say I love it. I love hate it. He's the one that makes this Christianity doable but also very challenging. So I really was anxious to get his words, you know, with the tempter, because I deal with temptation. We all deal with temptation. So I was anxious to have the red letter Jesus. You know what I found when I got the red letter Jesus in Matthew 4? When I wanted the red letter Jesus, what I got was the Deuteronomy Jesus. Every time he speaks, he's quoting scripture here. I'm not sure this is the red letter Jesus at all. This is Matthew putting words in Jesus' mouth. Matthew, the gospel writer, and I kind of wrestled with Matthew a little bit this week. I was like, I wanted Jesus, and you gave me Deuteronomy. Man shall not live by bread alone, but every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. I believe that's Deuteronomy 8 something. That's the only part in red here. And it's not Jesus, but it's Jesus saying, it is written, quote. So technically, the red letter Jesus, he said, it is written. Those are his words. And then we get Deuteronomy Jesus. And then he said to him again, it is written, you shall not tempt the Lord your God. That's from Deuteronomy 6. And further down, the next red letter Jesus shows up. Be gone, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and only him shall you serve. Another from Deuteronomy 6. Why did I get Deuteronomy Jesus? Part of me thinks the reason I got Deuteronomy Jesus is because the Jesus that we know and that we love and follow, this is who he is to his core. He's Torah Jesus. He's Jewish Jesus. He's Rabbi Jesus. He's trusting God in everything he does, Jesus. He's Shema Jesus. The Shema is this, this core of belief and confession in Deuteronomy 6, of all places. And it says, hear, O Israel, Shema Yisrael, the Hebrew word, Shema, hear. Shema Yisrael, the Lord your God is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Have you heard that before? That shows up in red letter Jesus later, too. When he's asked by a certain, you know, lawyer, what's the greatest commandment? What should I do to inherit eternal life? And he gives him Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy Jesus shows up again. The reason we have Deuteronomy Jesus is that we have Jesus who is steeped in his tradition, in his story, and in his faith. Red letter Jesus is faith Jesus is Deuteronomy Jesus. Isn't that amazing? And it's how he deals with the tempter. So I took the challenge and I tried to put some of these, rather than just quote Deuteronomy, I tried to see if I could put these three lines of Jesus into some, I don't know, in a way that makes sense. And one of them was, I want to live by more than bread. Right? His first answer, turn these stones into bread. You know what? I want to live by more. I want more from life. I can resonate with that. Because I've been searching for a word from you myself. And what I feel like I'm looking for is the more. I feel like we do with too little too often. We set the bar low. We just want what's convenient or easy. And I find that Jesus calls me to a higher place. You know, I talked about that a couple weeks ago, that Abraham Lincoln quote, that the better angels of our nature call us to more. I want to live by more than bread. I want that more because I think it's deeper and I think it's truer and I think it's more real and sustaining and life-giving. So I'm with Jesus on that. I want to live by more than bread. And for the second temptation, and Jesus is invited to take a leap of faith and trust God will send his angels to lift you up lest you dash your foot against a stone. And I have Jesus in a second line saying, I'd rather trust God than test God. His answer from Deuteronomy was, do not put the Lord your God to the test. And for me, on a daily basis, I think I want to walk around saying, you know, I think it's better to trust God than test God. Have you ever tested God? It's like, yeah, I'm going to see if this prayer thing works. So I'm gonna pray for those Powerball numbers. I'll put God to the test. If you really love me, you would want me to have the right numbers. Just this once. I don't have to win it every week. Come on. I'm not greedy. I mean, that's a stupid example, but there are a lot of ways that we sometimes test God when the invitation is to trust God. Very different. And trusting God leads to a different sort of life. It's not always easy. It's challenging. And there are things that come that make it difficult. The sorrow and betrayal are going to be part of our walk. But I'd rather trust God than test God. And finally, the last temptation is about worship and what's in it for me. Worship is not about what's in it for me. You know, the tempter shows him all these kingdoms, that I will give you this if you worship me. As if to appeal to our lower nature, what do you want? I'll give it to you. Right? Isn't that why we come to worship? To have our needs met? No? Isn't that why we stopped coming to worship? Because our needs weren't being met? They weren't playing the right kind of music, or the preacher wasn't preaching interesting enough and didn't tell enough stories, or he went on and on too much, blah, blah, blah. Right? No. I think it's Tex Sample who said, we don't go to worship to have our needs met. We go to worship to have our needs changed. We come here not to get our needs met. We don't come to worship because of what's in it for me. But we have our inside, we're changed from the inside out. And that changes us for real. Part of this wilderness excursion of Jesus reminds me of a scene in The Last Temptation of Christ. I can't remember if it's in the movie, but I read the book before the movie. You guys remember The Last Temptation of Christ? It was scandalous when it came out as a movie. It's a book by Nikos Kazantzakis. He also wrote Zorba the Greek, if that tells you anything about Nikos Kazantzakis. And he had this scene in there early on in Jesus' life. And Jesus is talking to his mother, Mary. And he's like, I'm not sure, Mom. I think I might have a demon. He's hearing these voices. He's like, I don't know if it's God or if it's a demon. And Mary says, well, if it's a demon, we can have that cast out. That's no problem. And Jesus says, well, what if it's God? And there's this sense that, well, if it's God, then you're on your own. I can't help you with that, basically. If it's God, it's going to be with you for a long time. You're never going to get rid of it. We can't call in the witch doctor and cast out God. I just think that's an interesting notion, that if it's God, it's a presence that's going to be with you for the rest of your life. And I remember at one point in my life, I might have heard that as a threat. You mean God's always going to be there watching for me to mess up and judging me when I'm wrong and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the older I get and the more embracing of faith I become, that sounds more and more like a promise than a threat. If it's God, you're going to be with God for a long time. And God is going to be with you for a long time. So that's my invitation as I come into the wilderness with Jesus. I find myself willing to at least entertain the notion that the voices, the questions pressing on my forehead from the inside, the lines that emerge, all of this is God. It's going to be with me for a long time. And I can trust it. And I can live into it. Thanks be to God.